Yo, what up, guys? We're back, and this week it's gonna be for UFC Busan, South Korea, which I believe starts at 2 a.m. East Coast time. So just be aware of that for everyone in the United States. But it's a okay card. It's pretty decent, actually. I kind of like a good number of fights there, and we did hit last week on the UFC 245 Parlay of the Week and Underdog of the Week. So that was very good, and really good card, man. I mean, the main event was like instant classic, sick fight. But we're gonna get into the first fight of the night here in South Korea with Healy Alatang taking on Ryan Benoit. And Healy Alatang, he was successful in his UFC debut. He took that victory over Danae Baccarat, and he's gonna be looking to build on that. He'll get the You know, he's getting a more established name here in Ryan Benoit. So if he wins here, it will be a more impactful win, in my opinion. And Ryan Benoit, he's returning from a pretty extended layoff, and he's hasn't competed at bantamweight, which this fight is at, for since t 2013. So it's been a long time, and he hasn't competed in MMA overall since November of 2017. And he's getting older. He's missing weight. He missed weight for his last fight at flyweight, so he's moving up here. That's probably why. And this fight is in South Korea, but Benoit, he's competed in Australia multiple times, so he's used to the travel. I feel like he'll probably be fine here in terms of going out here and competing. But I could see this fight being kind of boring. I believe Alatang is going to respect the power of Benoit, use a lot of movement, and I see Benoit following but not really cutting the cage off. And Benoit is moving up, but he's the bigger, more powerful puncher still, in my opinion. And he could turn fighters' lights out with one punch or one head kick. Very explosive. He closes the gap quickly, but he doesn't really throw in combinations, and most of his punches come pretty wide also. So, you know, he can be countered, and Alatang definitely throws tighter punches. But I just think it could be a lot of staring into the mirror unless Benoit gets a KO. And Benoit, you know, he may be better at cutting the cage off at 135, but you know, he hasn't shown that at flyweight. And if it goes to decision, I do believe it'll be close and in Asia. Maybe they'll give it to Healy Alatang, but I'm actually gonna pick Benoit by KO. I just think he can catch him at some point. I think Alatang is the type of guy who'll brawl. He kind of likes to get it back when he gets hit, and that could be his downfall versus a fighter like Benoit. You know, I just don't really think there's going to be too much grappling in this fight. Benoit is a decent wrestler himself, and Alatang showed some grappling in his last fight, but I feel like he won't be able to take down and hold down a guy like Ryan Benoit, even if he takes him down. And I just favor Benoit's experience. He's been in there with guys like Sergio Pettis. He's been in there with guys like Brandon Moreno, and fared fairly well, you know. So I'm going to go with Ryan Benoit to look good here in his 135 debut, and get a second round TKO victory over Healy Alatang. And up next here we have a fight at flyweight. I actually like this fight a lot. I think it's a good fight. I think both these girls are pretty good fighters. But you know, Miranda Granger, she had that impressive UFC debut. She handed Hannah Goldie her first professional loss, and she's 7-0, and she has finished 6 of her 7 wins. So she's been looking very good throughout her career so far. And her match with Hannah Goldie was the first time she ever went to decision. She did get the win, and she looks pretty well-rounded. She's long, she's rangy, and her hand speed is pretty good. She has a good jab left hook. She'll throw a 1-2 jab right hook combination, and she likes to throw two or three straight right hands in a row to close the distance. She'll also throw some decent outside low kicks, and she'll throw some round kicks to the body. But overall, her striking to me isn't the greatest. She will reach a lot to try to get in the clinch. She isn't the fastest, and she gets stationary with her movement at times. She looks hittable to me, but no opponent has really made her pay for that yet. And the fight she in this fight though, in my opinion, she's fighting the best striker she's ever fought. And Lemos is also a fighter who's been fighting at bantamweight. She's coming down to 125, and Granger is a former 115 pounder, so you know, it could be a power discrepancy here. Granger has expressed, you know, the desire to return that division. I believe her fight against, I think this is a fight where she's stepping in on short notice for Veronica Macedo, right? So I'm not 100% sure what went down here, but You know, Granger, she's not really a threat to knock you out on the feet. She has one TKO, which happened on the ground, and she's finished all of her fights on the mat or in the clinch. And she's a dangerous grappler. She likes to use her punches to close the distance. She'll get double underhooks, nice knees to the body, to the head. Very dangerous in the clinch also. She'll get standing guillotines. She's gotten two of those in her last four fights. And when she gets a hold of the neck, she'll throw big knees to the head as well. But she doesn't look to be the physically strongest fighter. Her wrestling really isn't great. And I have seen fighters be able to muscle her around, control her in the clinch, take her down, but she seems to allow opponents to take her down, and then, you know, she's very good at, you know, getting guard, where she'll throw up really good submissions. She did get a very good armbar against Jamie Colleen, and she'll look for body lock takedowns mainly, and she'll look to circle to the back off the body locks, look for rear naked chokes as well once she gets it to the mat, and she likes to use her length on the feet to take the back standing, like I just said, and she's pretty good at that, but she doesn't really look for many takedowns. She doesn't, you know, be very active with that, but she does look good in scrambles. She's more of a fighter who likes to flow, scramble on the ground, doesn't really care about position too much, and she's very dexterous with her legs. She can take top position in very odd ways. When she fought Jamie Thornton, she, you know, was able to take the back from north-south position on bottom, where she, like, rolled over, got the hooks in, and floundered out and finished the fight. And she kind of reminds me of, like, Cynthia Calvillo on the ground a little bit in terms of her ability to scramble. And but Cynthia doesn't really have those standing submissions, but she does have five submissions in her career. Granger, two arm bars, two guillotines, and a rear naked choke. And if she can create grappling situations, that's where she's dangerous, whether it's in the clinch, on top, or on bottom. And she seems like a girl who's down to scrap. She has a good mentality and showed good cardio for three rounds in her last fight. So definitely is, you know, a pretty solid fighter. And for Amanda Lemos, she's fighting for the first time in almost 2.5 years. She's returning from that USADA suspension. She did lose her UFC debut against Leslie Smith. And, you know, her job is likely on the line here. So she's going to have to come in here and fight hard. And she's only 6-1-1. And she's only has one win against a fighter with the winning record. But she's actually a pretty technical, powerful striker. Solid movement, heavy low kicks, inside, outside, nice jab, good left hook. And she'll walk opponents into 1-2s, double straight right hands. And she has a heavy, accurate overhand right. Pretty fluid hands, good hand speed. And she puts combinations together well. Definitely has power. Better hands than Granger for sure. Throws faster, cleaner. And she's a finisher. I mean, she throws with power. Heavy round and front kicks as well. She'll throw those to the body. She'll throw spinning heel kicks to the head, to the body. Defensively, Lemos does leave a lot to be desired. When fighters force her to trade, she can get a little bit wild. She doesn't move her head, and she will lean back with her chin in the air, and she can hold her hands low as well. And Leslie Smith, when they fought, she kind of beat up Leslie Smith early and looked like she had an adrenaline dump, and then Leslie put the pace on her, and she just couldn't keep up with it. She was backing up towards the cage, and had her hands low, and Leslie just put the volume on her and took her out. And, you know, she kind of shelled up against the fence rather than using movement. And she struggles to fight moving backwards. She doesn't offer as much. And when she can go forward, dictate the pace of the fight, though, she's usually winning and usually putting damage on opponents. And she looks like a good athlete, decent technique. And maybe the time off will have helped her with her footwork defensively. And she has finished 5 of her 6 wins via KO. She was finished by elbows against Leslie Smith, but it was standing up. She wasn't, like, knocked out or anything. And Lemos, she's not a very active grappler. I highly doubt she'll want to grapple with a dangerous submission artist like Miranda Granger. But Lemos, she has been backed up pretty easily in past fights. She also can be controlled in the clinch. And I haven't seen Lemos have to deal with many good wrestlers, but she has shown decent takedown defense against the cage. I have seen her take down an opponent with a trip in a regional scene fight. And, you know, I have seen her, though, get taken down as well. And she did get her guard passed and her back taken, but that was like 4 or 5 years ago. And, Lemos was able to, hit a deep half guard sweep, take top position in that same fight. But she doesn't really like to control in top position. I've seen her stand up when she gets the opportunity. And she does have one guillotine finish. I feel that Lemos will be in trouble in the clinch and on her back. And, there is limited footage of that part of her game, but I just don't think she looks very impressive there. And she slows down in fights, or at least she slowed down in her fight against Leslie Smith. But, you know, I feel like in this fight she's going to come in better shape. It's at 125, and I think that that fight with Leslie was her first UFC fight. It was on short notice, and she has to prove herself here. She has to do something and fight well. And Miranda Granger, she's the taller fighter who likes to fight long, but I feel like she has to get in the inside in this fight. She was content to stay on the outside, throw oblique kicks, kept it low volume. She landed some nice straights against Hannah Goldie. If she has that same game plan against Lemos, I see Lemos landing hard low kicks, combinations, body head, and Granger's hittable. And I feel like Lemos is undoubtedly the better striker. But Granger, you know, she does show a good chin, and when she gets tagged, she will try to get close, tie it up. And she's dangerous always. If she grabs that neck in the clinch or gets top position, or even if she's on her back, I feel she has a big chance of getting the submission. But if she doesn't and she keeps it on the outside, because it's not as if she has great takedowns, I think Lemos is going to pick her apart and beat her up. And this is interesting because I disagree with the line completely. And I'm actually going to take the shot. I'm going to pick Amanda Lemos. I feel she's going to land nice low kicks that hurt Granger, slow her down. And when Granger tries to get inside, I see her landing combinations, angling off. And I feel then Granger will kind of get more complacent staying on the outside. And then Lemos is either going to win a slow-paced striking fight, or Granger might try to go for it and get the finish or get finished. But I'm going to say Lemos wins via decision here in this fight. And up next to Saeed Nurmagomedov taking on Hayoni Barcelos. And don't really know why this fight is so low on the card. This is one of the best fights on the card here. And Hayoni Barcelos, he's looked fantastic since joining the UFC. 3-0 with 3 finish victories. And this fight was scheduled for May of this year, but Saeed had to pull out due to an injury. And they're finally going to get to run it back now in December. I'm not sure why it took so long to book these guys again after that matchup, but you know, here we are, they're going to fight each other. And Barcelos, man, he's an impressive striker. He's a great athlete, good movement, good feints, good head movement, very fast in and out, cuts the cage off very good, and he definitely makes opponents fight off their back foot and near the fence most of the time. And he has a great jab, very good 1-2, heavy low kicks, nice hook combinations. He can close the distance very quickly with his right hook, and he has a nasty uppercut, man. I mean, we've seen that time and time again in his UFC career. He'll feint the level change, come up with the uppercut. He'll also grab a single, let go of that single, come up with the uppercut. He'll throw an uppercut straight right hand or uppercut left hook, and very fast hand speed, very explosive guy. He will throw some occasional body kicks along with some round and spinning kicks to the head. And he can be hit if you time him when he enters, but his defense is very sound. He moves his head very well, always pushing you back, so he kind of jams kicks. And he has 7 KO TKOs. He's never been finished by strikes. And he's a strong wrestler. He's a Jiu-Jitsu world champion as well. So this guy is well-rounded. He's competed on the Brazilian national wrestling team. He took silver at the Pan Am Games in 2006. And he has a very good double leg, great timing on it. And that uppercut that I was talking about disguises the double very well. Good body lock takedowns, good singles. And he'll take opponents down easily when he gets them against the cage. And in top position, nasty elbows, good card passing, back takes, good rear naked chokes. And he has good takedown defense. I haven't really seen many people shoot on him, which we probably will see here in the matchup with Saeed Nurmagomedov. But in his lone loss, he was taken down. He did give the back and got submitted by rear naked choke. But he does have 2 submissions himself. And for Saeed Nurmagomedov, he has started his UFC career 2-0. He's won a fight at 125 and a fight at 135. And he's coming off a quick knockout victory over Ricardo Ramos, which is an impressive win there. And Saeed, he's a flashy striker with a wrestling base. Good 1-2, quick jab. His counter left hook is very nice, very tight. Good rear uppercut. He throws a lot of front kicks to the legs, to the body. He likes to follow his 1-2s with question mark kicks, rear leg head kicks. He's definitely the kicker in this matchup, where Barcelos is the boxer. His overhand right's pretty accurate. He does like to close the distance with some straight punches. Good knees to the body. He's a switch stance guy. He'll throw front kicks with both legs. Nice spinning kicks. And he landed a spinning heel kick, which hurt Ricardo Ramos before finishing him. He'll throw nice jump knees to the head. But he's kind of plodding. I feel, you know, that Barcelos is going to have the faster feet. And he was overextending on his punches against Scoggins a lot. He got dropped with a couple counters. Definitely feel like if Haione can back him up and jam the kicks, he's going to be the better boxer here. But long range, Saeed's going to have a chance to land those heavy kicks. And Saeed isn't a heavy power puncher. And he relies kind of more on volume, landing flashy strikes to wow the judges. He does have 2 TKOs in his career, and he's never been finished by strikes. And he's pretty durable. I mean, he did recover from some big shots against Justin Scoggins. And he's a strong wrestler. He does a good job using takedowns to set up his strikes. He'll shoot a single leg, takedown, and if it's defended, he will control a wrist, throw left hook, spinning back fists. So he's good off the breaks, fast shots, good singles, good doubles. And his length gave him an advantage to his length does give him an advantage still, but really at 125 it gave him a big advantage to get his hands connected, get easy takedowns. He will shoot double legs, get double underhooks, push opponents to the cage, control there. And land body lock takedowns as well. So he's a good, good at chaining his takedowns together. And on top, he has good control, but he wasn't really able to pass the guard of Justin Scoggins in their fight. He did land some nice punches, good elbows, but he didn't do a ton of damage. He does have good cardio. He'll press forward and try to win the fight for 15 minutes. But, his constant pressure does wear on guys. In his second UFC fight, he did dust his opponent in round one. But he only has 3 submissions in his career. He's definitely more of a decision fighter. But he's never been finished. And in this fight, I'm going to pick Barcelos to get it done. I'm a fan of his style. I love his boxing. I love his double leg. And I see his forward pressure jamming the kicks of Saeed, forcing him to fight a more boxing-oriented fight, which favors Haione. And Saeed may go for takedowns, but he has to watch out for the takedowns of Haione as well and the world champion jiu-jitsu skills. And I don't think he's going to be able to control and hold Haione on the mat. And so I'm going to go with Haione control the fight and win a decision here. So I'm going with Haione Barcelos via decision. And up next here we have another awesome fight, Pantoja against Matt Schnell. And man, they don't give the flyweights enough respect, man. The 4th fight on the card here for this fight, these two guys are going to go out and have a great fight. I mean, that Brandon Moreno fight versus Kai Car France, that was an awesome fight. But Pantoja, he's taking on Matt Schnell. Schnell's on a roll right now. He's won 3 fights in a row. He's looking good. He's been getting finishes, submissions in the first round. And he's coming up against Pantoja, who was on a roll himself, but he got his momentum halted by Deiveson Figueiredo, where he lost a decision there. But to me, he didn't lose a lot of stock because he showed his heart. He brawled with one of the hardest hitters in the division, got his licks in as well. And at the end of the fight, he was the one pressuring forward, and it looked like he was the one that had the cardio, and Deiveson was getting a little bit tired. But he did get some takedowns as well in that fight. And this fight, I feel like Pantoja is the better grappler, even though Schnell's been getting these submissions. He is the black belt, and his scrambles are incredible, man. Very hard to hold down. His back takes are unbelievable. He was out scrambling Brandon Moreno, who's one of the best scramblers in the division. So I'd be very surprised to see a guy like Matt Schnell go in there and submit Pantoja. I mean, he would have to hurt him bad or something on the feet. And Pantoja's never been finished in his career. 25 fights. He's fought guys that hit hard. He's fought guys that have black belts in jiu-jitsu like Wilson Hayes. And none of them have been able to get him out of there. And Pantoja, I mean, he's gotten a little bit better with his striking in terms of, he's a little bit wild. He'll explode in. He's a little bit wide. He can be a little bit deliberate in the way he closes distance. But he's gotten tighter with his shots, faster with his hand speed. He has a very, really good jab now. Heavy low kicks that he's always had. And his forward pressure is really good. I mean, that's where he breaks guys. Forward pressure, eats your shots, comes back with sharp counters. If you want to beat Pantoja, you got to be ready to take some punishment yourself. And know that after that fight, you're going to be sore. You're going to know you've been in a fight. And, Deiveson Figueiredo was able to get a couple takedowns off of the, entries that, like I just said, of Pantoja that are a little bit deliberate. But Pantoja scrambled right back to his feet. Pantoja got a couple takedowns himself. And neither guy could really control position. But in this fight, Matt Schnell is going to be the faster guy on the feet for sure with the hands as well. And he throws tighter, straighter punches. So when Pantoja comes crashing in with the hard shots, he's going to want to try to counter with these straight, tight shots down the middle. and try to hurt Pantoja, stun him as he's coming in with the counter shot, or just land an angle the whole fight. And I feel like maybe he can hurt him. Then at that point, maybe he could jump on a submission if Pantoja panic wrestles or something. But the thing about this fight that I don't like for Matt Schnell is we've seen Matt Schnell get hurt a lot in previous fights, get knocked out. And Pantoja, I've never even seen him drop, man. In his fight with Deiveson Figueiredo, he was fighting one of the hardest hitters probably in the history of the flyweight division. And, you know, he was eating his shots, still coming forward. He didn't get discouraged. So a guy like Matt Schnell, I know that he doesn't hit as hard as Deiveson, but maybe, I mean, just because of the sharpness, he might put Pantoja on his butt if he doesn't see a shot coming. But I feel like Pantoja will most likely be able to eat the shots that Schnell throws, and he's going to be constantly pressuring forward, constantly looking to counter, constantly looking for that jab, those low kicks. And I'm just not sure that Schnell's going to be able to hold up with his durability. I feel like maybe that eventually Schnell's going to start shooting takedowns, get a little bit desperate, and Pantoja's going to turn up, start really putting it on him, throwing hard combinations. I mean, we saw Pantoja bully Brandon Moreno in there, and I feel like Brandon Moreno is a lot more durable than a guy like Matt Schnell. So I feel like Pantoja might even be able to go out there and get a knockout victory in this fight, or a TKO. So I'm going with Alexandre Pantoja to get a third round TKO victory here. And up next here we have a fight with Omar Morales, who's making his UFC debut, taking on Dong Hyun Ma. And Morales is going to be looking to start his career off right with a win here. He's going to have to do it in enemy territory in South Korea. But Morales, he's 8-0. He's very impressive, you know, had an impressive performance on the Dana White Contender Series. Trains at a great gym, Hard Knock 365, which the champion Kamaru Usman trains at. And Morales, he's not been very active throughout his MMA career. This is going to be the first time he's fighting more than one time in a calendar year since 2012. And due to that, he's 34 years old, so he doesn't really have time to waste or fights he can lose. So he should be coming in here laser sharp, focused. Maybe, you know, the jitters aren't going to get to him as much. I do think, you know, fighting in that element of the Dana White Contender Series is kind of similar to fighting in Tough. And I feel like it allows those guys to kind of lose the jitters a little bit. I'm not saying they don't have them at all. Some people are affected in different ways, but I feel like that does help some guys. But Morales, you know, he's still a bit of a mystery. There's only two fights of him online. One of them is 58 seconds, but he looked very good in his last match, man. He's a huge guy for the division. He's explosive, good lateral movement. He likes to fight pretty and on the outside. Really nasty rear leg kicks, man. Nasty low calf kicks. Really fast high kick. Really nice jab. Good 1-2. And his pull counter straight right hand is really nice. He has that ability to mix in tight hooks, counter uppercuts inside that stun opponents. Really tight with his punches. And he usually throws with one or two shot attacks and tries to exit angle off. And his defense isn't the best when someone can get inside and pocket fight with him. But he battered Harvey Park's leg, then took him out with a nasty combination of punches in his last fight. And he definitely is the more technical striker with more raw power. Ma's going to have to make it ugly, test Morales' heart. But Morales has a lot of confidence right now. And on the feet, he has back-to-back knockout victory. And he's been looking good. So his grappling, it's kind of a bit of an unknown. There isn't a lot of footage on his grappling, but he's a big explosive guy. In his last match, he did show the ability to dig underhooks, circle off the cage very well. He did allow himself to get backed up and controlled for periods of time during that fight, but he was never taken down, and he probably landed more clinch strikes too. And he has nice knees to the body. He does have submission victories, and apparently he won a decision with a wrestling heavy game plan. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to find any footage of him defending or shooting takedowns or on the ground. But he does have two rear naked choke victories. He has a guillotine and an armbar victory. So he has four submissions. And maybe he's competent on the ground as well. He did seem like he was getting a little bit tired with the forward pressure of Harvey Park in his last fight. But, you know, he eventually did get the finish in that one. But for Dong Hyun Ma, he needs to right the ship here. He's been destroyed in his last two matches. He, you know, got finished badly by KOTKO, and he took a ton of damage just 4 months ago. He was knocked out cold earlier this year as well, so not been good 2019 for Dong Hyun Ma. And I'm not sure he'd be fighting this quickly if this fight were not in his home country. But fighting in South Korea has to give Ma motivation, and I'm sure he's going to be ready to go. He likes to work behind his jab, left hook, leg kicks. He's pretty active with his right leg. He'll throw round kicks to the body, to the head from orthodox, and he will switch stances. He'll throw kicks with the front leg from southpaw. He'll attack with round kicks, body and head, decent front kicks. And he's very flat-footed, though. Stands right in front of opponents, doesn't move his head. And when he gets tagged, he just plants his feet and brawls instead of moving. He did drop Scott Holton with a left hook in his last match, but Scott was just, you know, being dumb, brawling with him inside. And he's taken a lot of damage in his UFC career, man. He was finishing a war against Marco Polo Reyes, quickly knocked out by Devontae Smith. Scott Holtzman systematically beat him down, then finished him by doctor stoppage. And he's just not very dangerous on the feet. Fighters could stay in the pocket with him without fear of getting knocked out if they're durable. And he has 6 KO TKOs, but most of those are on the ground. He has been finished 3 times by knockout, and those 3 came in his last 3 losses, so his durability is going. And he's a judo black belt, solid body locks, good judo throws, solid clinch control, and he will throw knees to the body and try to bank control time in that position. But when he gets top position, he likes to take the back, good pressure, but he seems to not have great top control. When he tries to get damage off or go for a submission, opponents are able to stand up. And he isn't a very active seeker of the takedown. In 6 UFC fights, he has 6 takedowns, and 4 of those came in 1 fight. And he's not gotten a takedown in his last 4 fights. Even with the judo black belt, he can get controlled and taken down. And he does have a good get-up game. He's hard to control on the mat. I doubt he's going to get taken down in this fight. He does have 6 submissions, but all were pre-UFC. And he's been submitted twice himself. But in this fight, I think as long as Omar Morales stays long, it's his fight to lose. Throw those heavy low kicks, throw that high kick, stick and move. Don't stand in front of or brawl with Ma. And Ma isn't aggressive enough in his fights, especially recently. He allowed himself to get picked off at long range. And Ma may come out very hard here to save his job, and since he's in his home country. But he needs to close the distance, be more aggressive, force a brawl, test Morales' grappling, test his heart. And I've never seen Ma do that, really. I feel that Morales is going to hurt him with the low leg kicks, maybe even finish him later in the fight with a high kick. I think he's going to be much faster, better footwork, put damage on Ma. And, you know, I think he's sharper with his punches also. Ma's taken a lot of damage recently, and due to that, I'm going to go with Morales via second round KO here. Like this right here. Explain to me how this fight is higher on the card than Pantoja versus Machnell. But, man, okay. Up next here, we got Sungwoo Choi taking on Suman Mokhtarian. These guys are 0-3 so far in the UFC as a record overall. But, you know, Sungwoo, he's getting a chance to right the ship in his home country, get the win. And he's a pretty big favorite. He's a long rangy striker, good distance control, really good leg kicks, good 1-2. And he has a good pull counter. He has a good straight right hand, nice round kicks, nice front kicks, spinning heel kicks. So he's good kicker as well. Very technical. He doesn't really overextend, doesn't put himself in bad positions. If this fight stays on the feet, stays striking, it's a choice fight all day. He has 5 knockouts and 8 wins, and he's durable. He has been finished by strikes just 1 time in his career. And he's a very big guy for the division. He hits really hard. And he's an offensive grappler, but he has nice elbows in close range. Fast hand speeds off the break with combinations. He'll land some pretty big knees in the thigh plumb. And he uses his length and physicality to deny takedowns pretty well. He was dominated by Mavzar Evloev, and he did get rear naked choked by Gavin Tucker, but I feel like those guys have better takedown games, and they're more physical than a guy like Suman Mokhtarian. But, you know, if it does hit the ground, Mokhtarian does have a chance of locking him up, getting a submission here. But that was the first submission loss for Choi there. And Suman, he's in dire need of a victory. He's 0-2 in his last 2 fights. Even though he's 8-1 in his professional record, he's coming off a loss as well on the Ultimate Fighter. And he has 7 finishes in his 8 wins. He's an aggressive guy. Closes the distance with hooks. And he's a powerful right hook. He has a very wide stance, and he's very susceptible to being leg kicked. He will throw leg kicks of his own, high kicks, but he's more of a puncher. And he isn't very technical. He really just uses hooks to try to close the distance and grapple. He'll try to talk to opponents and get them to brawl where he can clinch up with them. And he has a very good chin. You know, he could be low volume, though, and just get outstruck by fighters who can move. Ricky Steele showed that on Tough. And against Sadiq Yusuf, Mokhtarian left his head right on center line and was just getting hit with massive shots. Was way too slow for Sadiq, and his stand-up just isn't dangerous. He was finished for the first time in his career in his last fight. And, you know, he only has one TKO in his whole career, but he's a tricky grappler. He can lock up submissions from, you know, a lot of positions. He's gotten a twister before. And he kind of just likes to cross the distance, get in the clinch, look for body locks. He'll try to jump for guillotines from that position. He will duck under for some double legs, and he can control fighters against the cage that are low level. In his two matches on the Ultimate Fighter and in the UFC, he did get position against the fence, but he was reversed there pretty quickly. And he hasn't attempted any takedowns in either of those fights. He isn't a guy that shoots takedowns from range. He isn't very explosive. And I think he's going to really struggle to take down UFC-level opponents. He does have 7 submissions, and I've seen him get high-level submissions, like I said, like twisters. He has the heart to stay in there. He wants to win badly, and he's obviously going to come in shape. He's not going to break. But in this fight, I favor Choi pretty comfortably. He's going to be the bigger, likely stronger fighter. He's going to have the reach, speed, and technical striking advantage. I see him being able to attack with elbows, knees, and the clinch as well. And at range, I see this being Choi's fight all day. I think he could put Suman out cold. He's precise. He has power. And Suman is someone who walks into shots and you know, wants you to hit him more. So if you do that against Choi, I think Choi's going to get a second-round KO here in front of his home crowd. So I'm going with Sungwoo Choi to get off the schneid and finally get a UFC victory here. And up next, we got another fight that I think is a little low on the card, with Ciryl Gane taking on Tanner Boser. This card lineup is a little odd, but you know, Ciryl Gane continues to do big things not most heavyweights can do. And we saw him get a leg lock finish in his last fight. Obviously, we all know his striking is really good. I mean, great head movement, long reach, good jab, straight punches. You'll attack the head and body, switches stances, slips and rips well. Barely been getting hit in his fights, really hard leg and oblique kicks, and very just calm, composed in there, doesn't get tired. He'll mix in spinning kicks, spinning back fists, and you know, he's just very good at picking his shots, never kind of goes crazy in there. And when he has you hurt, he'll be composed, look for the finish. And he has 3 KO TKOs. And I haven't really seen him tagged or how he reacts to when he gets hit hard, but his defense is very good, and I would be surprised if Tanner Boser is able to, you know, land a big kill shot on him. But, you know, Gane, he's earned 2 submission victories in his first 2 UFC fights. I mean, we saw him get that leg lock submission. He got an arm triangle very quickly against Pessoa, and he's also dangerous in the Muay Thai clinch. You know, he'll land knees, then get body locks right after, kind of like Overeem style. Catches kicks well to get takedowns. And he's been finishing these fights quickly when he gets in top position. Obviously not afraid to try any submissions like we saw with the leg lock. And he doesn't get tired, man. He's very cool, calm, collected. And for Tanner Boser, he earned a pretty dominant victory against Daniel Spitz via decision. He won every round of that fight. And he's a veteran. He's not going to be intimidated by a hype train like Gane, but he's a low-volume guy, likes to work behind kicks, counter punches, jabs, head and body. And he's just, I feel like he's just, he'll throw some overhand rights, he'll try to come inside with some hooks. But he's a guy that likes to fight on the outside. He can be pretty flat-footed, come up short with a lot of his shots. And he doesn't tend to go first much. And that could be a problem for him in this fight. He gets a much taller, faster opponent. He does pick it up as the fight goes on. He will start to cut the cage off, switch stances, throw more volume. But he's hittable himself. He has a great chin. I've seen him take some bombs and, you know, keep coming. And his low kicks are dangerous. I mean, he's hurt his last few opponents with low kicks. He's finished fight with low kicks. But I think it's going to be hard to land low kicks on a guy like Ciryl Gane. And he isn't an offensive grappler. I mean, he isn't a guy that's going to shoot for takedowns. He isn't bad off his back. He does have decent get-ups. He'll attack with Kimuras. I feel like he's a good cardio guy as well. and he'll work off the breaks. His takedown defense is pretty good. He's someone, you know, where I feel like he's more professional. He's a better overall skill set than these fighters he's fighting. But I feel like Dontal Mays was probably even more dangerous than Bozer. You know, Bozer, you know, he's going to be there the entire fight. He's going to pose some threats with his leg kicks. But I just think with Gon's distance control and his movement, it's going to make it hard for Bozer. I feel like Bozer will be there. And, you know, I feel like he's going to have to come over the top with some counter overhand, some hooks, and try to take Gon's head off. But I think Gon's going to destroy him with long strikes, with kicks. I think he's going to make it look very easy. I think Bozer's going to look like a punching bag with legs. I think he's going to really struggle to hit Gon. I think Gon's going to look pretty, pick him apart. And I'm going to say Gon wins the decision. But if he gets top position, maybe he'll get another submission. If he can land a big kick or a knee, he could get a knockout. But I'm going to go with Ciryl Gon to win a decision here, 30-26, 30-25, something like that. In this next fight, we got Kyung-ho Kang taking on Ping Wan Lu. And Kyung-ho Kang, he's done well since returning from his five-year layoff. In 2018, he returned, I believe it was in January, and he's 3-1 since then. His one loss is a split decision against a good guy in Ricardo Hamosh. And he tends to fight close. He does have three splits in his last six fights. For Ping Wan Lu, he's going to be looking to bounce back from that devastating knockout loss. And that was just 5 months ago, but he's getting right back in there. And he's 2-1 in the UFC, and this is a big fight for his career trajectory. It is going to be against a South Korean in South Korea. And in this fight, we have the technical fighter versus aggressive bull. You know, Kang's going to be the technical guy. He's going to want to stick and move, pot shot, you know, get takedowns, fight professional. And he's very sharp. He has nice front kicks, straight punches, good counters, long-range pot-shotting style. He'll move with one-shot, two-shot combinations, angle off. And when opponents get aggressive, he'll duck under into double legs, well-timed body locks. And he'll also time knees. He has nice knees, good accuracy with the knees. He can hurt guys. And he can also stun fighters with jab straights because he's very sharp. His jab is very nice. He dropped Brandon Davis with it. He'll attack the body with the jab. And he should be much more technical as a striker here. He is heavy on his lead leg, and that did get exposed against Brandon Davis. He does a decent job of pulling the leg back, but he doesn't check them, and they can add up if guys can time them. And Kang also, when forced to go backwards, can get tired. He can start to admire his work a little bit, stay in range too much with his hands low, and get clipped with some decent shots. And Ping Wan Lu is a big explosive guy, so he has to be cognizant of that, and especially when he's in the pocket. But he has a good chin. I mean, he's only been KO'd one time very early in his career. And he can't get rocked, but he has good recoverability. And Kang is going to try to get this match to the ground, I think, as well, where I believe he's going to have good control on top and potentially even be able to submit Lu. I think he should be able to take down Lu pretty easily also. But the question is if he's going to be able to hold him down. Kang's length gives a lot of guys problems on the ground. And due to that, he has solid guard solid control, passing ability. And he's a dangerous submission guy. He has 11 submissions in his career. And for Ping Wan Lu, he's a guy who comes forward, very aggressive, pretty explosive, fast in and out. He'll throw nice hook combinations, hard overhands. And he'll look for head kicks. But his striking isn't at the level of Kang. I think he'll struggle with the sharpness. And he'll walk into shots. He ducks his head and swings, which is what got him knocked out with the knee in his last fight. And what he needs to do on the feet is press the action, throw in combination, make it a dogfight. Try to get Kang to exchange, catch him with a big shot. And Lu can also have periods of time where he gets tired from exploding and he'll just bounce around on the outside. And in this fight, he can't go backwards with Kang. He's going to get ate up if he does. And he's coming off a brutal knockout loss also, which makes guys gun-shy. And he has 4 KO TKOs himself, but he's been knocked out twice now. And he has to be ready to sprawl, defend takedowns, which he has struggled with in the past. You know, Damian Stasiak was able to take him down multiple times. But he's strong, solid cardio. He can muscle his way out of some situations on the ground, get sweeps through sheer power. But in a fight with Kang, who's a guy who's technical on the ground, I don't think that's going to work. And I feel like he has to really have the anti-grappling on point here because he's overmatched on the ground. But I think this fight is Kang's to lose. He should definitely win. He's better everywhere. Unless he underestimates Liu's athleticism or brawls with him, he should win the fight. Kang should be able to outstrike him, maybe even hurt him, take him out on the feet, take him down, and just outclass him, I feel like. And I'm going to say Kang wins a decision in this matchup. Now, next year, we have another fight that I think could potentially be a really fun fight. Marc-Andre Barriot taking on Jung-Yong Park. And Marc-Andre Barriot, he entered the UFC on a high. He was a two-division champion in TKO, but he's quickly been shown the UFC is a different level. He's 0-2. He's definitely in desperate need of a victory here. And he has fought two established veterans. Now, he's getting a pretty significant step down in competition versus Jung-Yong Park. But this will be Barriot's first fight in Asia. And Barriot, you know, he tries to be a tactical striker, slow down the pace, and he has a good jab, both body, head, nice left hook, throws with power, left hook, straight right hand combo, left hook, right uppercut combo, good hand speed, and he does do a good job of going over and around opponents' guards with combinations, decent footwork, but he can be flat-footed, plodding at times, and he is heavy on his lead leg, and he'll also allow opponents to back him up, and he shells up against the cage. He does have big power, though, and when he's shelling up, he can come back with a big shot, knock you out at times, and you know, he has 8 KO TKOs, and he's never been finished by strikes. He's an average grappler, in my opinion, but that's what he needs to go to here in this fight. He is good in the clinch, nice knees, dirty boxing, decent wrestling. And in half guard, he will slow cook his opponents with short punches, elbows. He'll look to trap arm, let shots go. And he has decent back takes as well, good mount. In his last win, he took the mount, showed strong control, and finished his opponent there. And his takedown defense is questionable. He can be flat-footed. Fighters are able to close the distance. Get him against the cage also. And, you know, he can be out-muscled in the clinch. I've seen him tossed head over heels before. And I've seen fighters take his back standing. But his grappling overall is probably better than Park's. And he's going to be the bigger guy in there. But for Jung-Yong Park, he had a loss in his UFC debut. But it was a fun back-and-forth war with Anthony Hernandez. And Park's going to be looking to return to his winning ways here. Prior to that loss, he'd won 7 in a row, 6 finishes. And he's a good striker. He has good movement, distance control, fast hands. He slides in and out of range while feinting very well, working behind that jab. Nice 1-2, jab right hook, jab overhand right. He likes to throw a 1-2 to a left hook combination that's money. And he has power in his hands. He hurts opponents with punches. But he's more of a volume guy. He'll touch opponents a lot with combinations, then dig in with power shots. Very nice stinging tight punches that opponents don't see coming. Nice counter hooks, uppercuts. Very accurate. And he catches kicks, returns with punches. Nice kicks himself, good body and head kicks. And in close range, he'll throw big elbows, knees. He'll throw step-in knees to the head. And he can stand a little heavy on his lead legs. Sometimes he can get a little wild. And he doesn't move his head much in the pocket. Anthony Hernandez had success when he walked him down, ate his counter shots, returned with power over the top. He rocked Park with some overhands, some hooks. But overall, Park, he's a technical striker with power. He could strike going forwards, going backwards. He has great cardio. He'll pick up the pace with combinations when he sees you slowing down. Very good flurries. And when his opponents are against the cage, that's when he gets most of his knockouts. He does have 4 KO TKOs, and he is very durable. He's never been finished by strikes. He's shown questionable grappling skills. His wrestling isn't at the level it needs to be. He can be controlled in the clinch, and he doesn't use proper techniques to defend body locks. He can get taken down fairly easily also, but he's dangerous with jiu-jitsu. I mean, he'll utilize front chokes to counter takedowns. He did get a nice anaconda choke against Ray Cooper III, and he has good get-ups. When he does get taken down, he does a good job of using the cage to stand up. He likes to go belly down, work his way back to his feet, which he does give his back in that scenario. And Park won round one, though. He showed he could stand up several times off bottom against Anthony Hernandez. But in round two, Hernandez landed some nice ground and pound, eventually got a guillotine. And Park has to have been working to close the gap on his ground game. And is actually fighting a striker in this matchup, which should help him out here. But Park has been submitted 2 times, and he's a fighter who's competed at 170. He's a little bit small for the weight class. High-level grapplers will certainly be an issue for Park, but one of Park's biggest assets is is his cardio. The pace of his UFC fight and his UFC debut was crazy. Even if you take him down, he's not going to accept position or get tired. When he scrambles back up, he's right back in your face with combinations. And in this fight, I see Park having a big advantage on the feet. Barry out slower, he's a plodding guy, and I think his movement and the fluidity in his jabs, his uppercuts, his straight punches, his combinations are going to keep Barry out at bay. I feel also his sharp counters like the left hooks when Barry out overextends could stun Marc-Andre, but Barry out's a big, powerful guy, and he has the chance to land an overhand or hook over the top that hurts Park, but I think on the feet, he's going to be a step behind, and he needs to close the distance, get in close range, dirty box, get it to the cage, get in on the legs, take Park down, and if Barry out could take him down, establish position, I think he will be very heavy on top and be the bigger guy. If Park scrambles back up to his feet when he gets taken down a couple times, though, I think that's going to be bad news for Marc-Andre. Marc-Andre, he's already had gassing problems in previous fights, and coming in with a grappling-heavy game plan, especially if he can't hold Park down, will get him in trouble. He has to protect his neck at all times also. And if Barry out can't control against the fence, get takedowns, or get mount, then he's probably going to get a finish. But I just don't think he can do that. I see Park out striking him easily, getting him tired with the pace. And unless Barry out can finish or establish takedowns, I'm going to say Park wins a fun back-and-forth fight via late second-round TKO here. And I'm actually fairly confident in Park. And up next here, we got Da-Eun Jung taking on Mike Rodriguez. And Dong Jung is going to be looking to move 2-0 in his career in the UFC. And he was able to weather the storm and finish Khadis Ibragimov in his UFC debut. And he's a composed guy in the cage. And as a striker, he's a technical boxer, I would say. He has a nice jab, good feints, forward pressure. He'll throw a 1-2, jab, left hook. And his straight right hand is pretty straight, tight down the middle. He'll, pull counter with the 1-2, and when he backs fighters up, he starts to get him tired, put longer combos together, touch points with punches, then stick them with powerful straights or uppercuts, and he keeps a solid amount of volume out there, good forward pressure as well, and he'll mix knees into combinations. He doesn't really throw kicks, though, very often. He will occasionally throw high kicks, but Jung's defense on the feet is not very good. He doesn't move his head. He's pretty flat-footed, willing to stand in the pocket, and he doesn't utilize a lot of movement. He was getting hit with heavy shots in the pocket by Ibragimov and just shelling up against the cage. They could have easily stopped that fight, but he showed a good chin, and when he was hurt, he was composed. He didn't freak out, and he's never been finished by strikes, but it came close, like I said, in his last match. He doesn't have that one-shot power, but his pressure and volume breaks a lot of opponents, and he does have 9 KO TKO victories. For Jung, grappling-wise, he isn't really an offensive wrestler. He doesn't look for takedowns, but I have seen him get a couple double legs against the cage. His takedown defense looks a bit questionable, but he does have good get-ups, and he can sprawl on double legs, and when he does get takedowns, when he does get taken down, he's good at scrambling right back to his feet. He'll hit switches. He'll reverse the takedown, take top position. And on top, he's good. He has good top control, good passing ability. He'll look to get the crucifix position, and he finished a recent opponent in that way. In his last fight, he did get a standing guillotine against a very tired Ibragimov, but he isn't a big submission threat. That was only his second submission in his career. And, he has heart, good composure, good cardio. And fighting in his home country, I'm sure he's going to want to come in here and put on a show. But Mike Rodriguez, he's fighting for his UFC career here. He has lost 2 of his last 3 fights. Most recently, he lost to John Allen as a huge betting favorite. And Rodriguez is very dangerous, but he hasn't really put together his full MMA game. He's a great athlete. He'll use oblique kicks, front kicks, powerful round kicks. He took Devin Clark off his feet with the leg kick, which I think he could do here to Jung. Nice jab, fast straight right hand, but he doesn't really throw in combination much. He does have a good right hook, nasty round and front kicks to the body. In space, he's very dangerous because he can come up with jump knees, with spinning kicks. He closes his distance very fast, big elbows, and he has 7 knockouts and 9 wins. Good chin. He's never been finished by strikes. And he's improving as a grappler, but he did get taken down fairly easily in his last fight at times. He was taken down in round 1 and 3 with a body lock. He did work back to his feet, and in round 2, he was able to deny a takedown, took top position, and he was able to defend an armbar, defend a guillotine. But in the third round, he did get controlled on his back, and that's what lost him the fight. And he's still trying to put it all together. Definitely needs to stay off his back in this one. But I know Mike Rodriguez hasn't been the best in the UFC, but I'm pretty confident he's going to get the win here. He hits much harder. He's the longer fighter. He's the more diverse skill set. He's a better athlete. And Jung has okay takedowns when he can back fighters up, but I don't think his pressure boxing style will be enough to bother Rodriguez and back him up. I think Rodriguez's low kicks will be a big factor. His front and round kicks to the body, just the speed advantage. I think Rodriguez, when he has Jung hurt, will be more clinical, looking for the finish than Kattis was. He's not going to gas out like that. And Rodriguez has to be embarrassed about his last performance. I just see him winning here. I'm going to say he gets a first round TKO in this fight. And in this fight, interesting fight, right? The return of Doohoo Choi taking on Charles Jourdain. And the Korean Superboy, he's back after nearly 2 years away from the octagon. He's been serving in the Korean military, his mandatory term, and he cannot travel outside the country. But since the fight is in South Korea, he wants to jump in here. And, you know, the headliner of this event, Korean Zombie, he's looked fantastic since returning from his military service. So I'm sure Choi's taking some inspiration out of that. But prior to his departure, Choi had lost 2 fights in a row. He was brutally knocked out in both fights. And he's still a marketable guy. He's 3-2 in the UFC. He has that look, and from China, or South Korea, I'm sorry. And after taking on 2 established UFC veterans, he's kind of on the other end of the spectrum here with the 0-1 Charles Jourdain. But Choi's shown he's a knockout artist, great accuracy. His 1-2 is one of the cleaner 1-2s in the whole UFC. The straight right hand is the punch he finishes the majority of his fights with, and really, he really relies on it heavily. Very fast, big power, good straight left hand, overhand right combination. He will throw some standing elbows, but his arsenal really isn't that big. His right hand is relied upon heavily. And he hasn't thrown many kicks in the UFC. He does have some knee finishes on the regional scene, but hasn't showed those off in the UFC either. And his defense isn't the greatest. He uses a high guard, but opponents have had success landing overheads or hooks around the guard. And Choi will back himself up to the fence and kind of looks flustered. He'll drop his hands as he circles. And he's had problems with that against both Stevens and Cub. Choi looks at counter kicks, but Jeremy Stevens did have a lot of success with leg and body kicks. And Doohoo Choi is very composed. Even when he's hurt, it's kind of hard to tell. He had that epic war with Cub Swanson, but in his last fight with Jeremy Stevens, he was finished pretty brutally with ground and pound. It was the first KO TKO loss of his career. He does have 11 knockout wins, and he's won his last 8 fights in a row via KO TKO, or his last 8 wins are via KO TKO. And Jourdain, he's looking for a different result in his second UFC fight as he gets to return to his natural weight class. His last fight was on short notice at lightweight against Des Green. And it was a competitive fight, but at 24 years old, you can tell Jourdain is constantly improving. His grappling is much better than it used to be. And if he can knock off Choi, that's going to be a huge win for his career. He's a very good athlete. He's a rangy striker. Heavy low kicks, decent jab, but his lunging straight right hand is very nice. He'll throw a nice right hook to the body, to a right hook to the head. He'll also throw a right hook to the body, to a left hook to the head, or a right hook to the body, to a head kick. Decent overhand right. He'll mix in spinning back fist into combinations. Very fast. Good flying knees. He pushes a pace, tries to wear opponents out. And he's tough. He doesn't break. He'll continue to look for the finish until the last minute of the fight. Really insane cardio and pressure. Showed that against Desmond Green. Good power, 6 KO TKOs. And he's taking much less damage than Superboy. He's more durable. He's never been finished. And this is going to be a stand-up fight. And probably a great fight at that. Jourdain, he's the more explosive guy. Larger striking arsenal. Throws more volume. And he's likely going to be the fighter going forward. Choi is the more precise guy. He's going to be looking to land the 1-2 or the clean shots that put Jourdain down. I feel like Jourdain will have a lot of success with low kicks if he sets him up, though. And he needs to be walking forward, backing Choi up constantly, attacking the body, back Choi to the cage, trying to exploit his defense. And he should be able to land quality flurries if he could back Choi up. We have seen Choi get tired before. I feel that Jourdain being the more active guy will also help him be able to push a faster pace. Jourdain's going to be the faster guy closing the gap. He's going to be the more explosive athlete. But he can't sometimes drop his hands before throwing knees or kicks. And that's what he can't do here, because Choi's a counter striker. And if he lands clean, it could be lights out for Charles. But I was impressed with Jourdain's aggression, his cardio, and the feet in his last match. And his two losses were via decision where he got out-wrestled. And Korean Superboy isn't going to bring that element here. If Choi doesn't catch him with a knockout shot, I don't see him winning. I'm not really sure how he's going to look forward this layoff either. And who knows where his confidence level is after losing back-to-back fights, taking a lot of damage. And I'm actually going to pick the upset here. I'm going to go with Charles Jourdain via decision to win this fight. Man, the co-main event of this card, this is a great fight. Volkan Ozdemir taking on Alexander Rakic. And Volkan, he got back on track. He had a great performance in his last fight against Alir Latifi. Really put it on him, took him out. And Alexander Rakic, man, he's been looking dominant since he joined the UFC. He's undefeated. He just had that high kick knockout of Jimmy Manoa that was really, really nice. And he's going to be looking to take out Volkan, kind of get the Volkan test. Like Dom Reyes beat Volkan, got the title shot, even though it was a very disputed fight. And now Volkan's testing another prospect in Alexander Rakic. We're going to see if he's ready for the big time because, man, Volkan, he looked good, man, in his last fight. And in this fight, he's training with Ciryl Gane, which I feel like is a good look for Rakic. And you know, his cardio was sick in his last fight. Great forward pressure. He was constantly going forward, backing Alir up, landing body knees, left hook. He's kind of a master of the basics, man. Great jab, high guard, low kicks, left hook, right hook, overhands. Closes distance, has really crazy short-range power, obviously. And he's very durable, man. I mean, he could take huge shots and just continue to walk forward. And he was breaking the rhythm of Latifi. He was never letting him rest anywhere in the clinch. He was foot stomping him, shoulder shrugging him. When he got taken down, he dug an underhook, stood right back up immediately. And Volkan's grappling has improved a lot. His takedown defense is pretty good now. He landed multiple trip takedowns versus Dom Reyes. And he's recently earned his purple belt in jiu-jitsu as well. So congrats to Volkan for that. And, you know, really, Rakic, I feel like he's going to have to look for takedowns in this fight because I think on the feet, Rakic, he's hittable a little bit. I don't really like his defense, and I feel like he's going to get backed up in this fight because in a lot of fights, he likes to be the bully. He likes to be sliding in and out of range, backing guys up, controlling distance with his, you know, big size. But in this fight, man, I don't think you could do that against a guy like Volkan. If you want to try to back up Volkan, Volkan's going to come over the top with the overhands, with the hooks, and he's been susceptible to that. Like against Devin Clark, he got dropped with the left hook, which Volkan loves his left hooks. And, man, I feel like on the feet, Volkan's going to bully this guy. I think he's going to be able to walk him down. I think he's going to be able to land low kicks. I think he's going to be able to land hooks, overhands, and I think he's just going to be the more durable guy that hits harder, and I think he's going to be able to back up Rakic, because I don't think that movement of Rakic is going to be able to, you know, I don't think it's going to trump the cutting of the cage that Volkan has. I think Volkan cuts the cage off extremely well, and I think he's going to be attacking the body as well with those knees, and it's going to slow down Rakic throughout the fight as well. And I think Rakic has to get takedowns in this fight. He has to be able to change it up, control on top. And if he can get takedowns, mate, I feel like he's going to have a much better chance of controlling on top than a guy like Alir Latifi, because he's big, he's long, and you know, he showed great control, ground and pound against a guy like Justin Ledet. But you know, he's been taking down himself at some fights. He's not like a lifelong wrestler, so I feel like Volkan is the more sturdy guy. I really don't think Rakic is going to be able to take him down at will and hold him down. And, you know, like I said, Volkan's been working on his grappling, recently became a purple belt. But man, I mean, in terms of striking in this fight, like I said, I think Volkan, if they strike, I think Volkan's going to knock him out. I really do. I think this fight on the feet kind of resembles Jack Hermanson versus Jared Cannonier, where I just think that the forward pressure, the boxing, and the power difference is going to be pretty evident. You know, it's a big step up, man, from Jimmy Manoa, Devin Clark, Francimar Barroso or Justin Ledet also in there, to Volkan Ozdemir. I mean, yeah, he's been looking great. He knocked out Jimmy Manoa with that head kick. That was nasty. And I mean, like I said, Volkan has a sick chin, but if you land that head kick on someone, they're going to go down too. So Volkan has to respect this guy. But, you know, look what Volkan did to Jimmy Manoa. He beat him in 30 seconds too. So it's not like Volkan hasn't seen that level of competition or hasn't beat that level of competition. And I feel like Volkan, I think this one of, you know, Aliyev was an easy fight, and I think this is going to be an easy fight for Volkan. I think he's going to dominate this fight as long as it lasts. I think he's going to walk him down, land the bigger shots, you know, be able to block his kicks, jam the kicks, control the distance, and, you know, fight at his pace. I think he's going to deny the takedowns. I think he might even try to make a point, get a takedown himself. And I'm going to go with Volkan via second round KO in this fight. Man, turn of events here, right? It was supposed to be Brian Ortega versus Korean Zombie. Frankie Edgar was taking on Corey Sandhagen at 135 pounds. And Ortega pulls out, and, you know, Frankie Edgar says, fuck it, man, throw me in there. I'll move up, back up to 45s, go to South Korea, and fight this dude in his home country. They were already set up to fight, so I'm sure that they, you know, have game plans on each other, what they want to do, but I just don't like the spot for Frankie Edgar, man. I mean, I don't understand it. You know, he was talking about going to 135 to get a title run going. He was already in camp, so I mean, I don't know if he's been like slimming him down, or who knows if he's going to be even smaller than he usually is for 145s. And now he's jumping up. He said he's just doing it because he wants a paycheck before the end of the year, but to me, that's never a good reason to jump in the octagon. And the Korean Zombie's been training for Ortega, who is a guy that was likely going to try to get it to the ground. So I'm sure his jiu-jitsu is extremely sharp right now. And, you know, on the feet, I just feel like Zombie is much better, man. I feel like Frankie has that boxing, and they are going to be around the same size. So, I mean, the feints, the low center of gravity, and, you know, the ability to box may give Zombie some trouble early in terms of, you know, maybe Frankie will land some shots himself, but I think that Zombie hits much harder. I think that Zombie's going to be coming forward. We saw the way that when he fought Moicano, man, who's a long guy, when he fought Yuri Rodriguez, he's able to get inside on these guys who are more dangerous strikers than Frankie, and he took Moicano out with that nasty shot. He has big power in the pocket. He showed that against Bermudez and Moicano recently. He has a lot of early fast knockouts, and they don't call him the Zombie for nothing, man. I mean, he could take a shot, continue to come. I mean, we saw what it took for Yair to put him down, and Frankie is an explosive guy like that. I would be really surprised if Frankie knocked out Zombie, and to me, Frankie's durability is the one that's a little bit more questionable at this point, even though they've both historically been known for being zombies. You know, I feel like Frankie, we saw him get put down by Ortega, and you know, I just don't, I mean, Frankie's path to victory in this fight, I feel like would be takedowns, but I just don't see that. I don't think he's going to just take down or hold down Korean Zombie like he did a Yair or someone like that. I mean, we've seen Zombie have some of the best scrambles in the UFC. We've seen him submit Dustin Poirier with a Darce choke, submit Leonard Garcia with a twister. And I just don't think he's going to hold him down for five rounds also. I think Zombie's going to be coming at him. It's in South Korea, man. So this guy's going to be willing to die for this even more than he usually is. And man, I just don't see, I feel like it'd be almost disrespectful to pick Frankie Edgar to beat Korean Zombie. You'd have to think Korean Zombie isn't shit. If you're going to pick Frankie Edgar, who's planning to fight at 135, to just jump in here and beat Korean Zombie at up a weight class where Zombie's been looking great and Frankie's been on a slide, I mean, you just don't have that much respect for Zombie, especially in Zombie's home country as well, in South Korea. I mean, I don't know. I'm going with Korean Zombie to get a knockout in this fight. I think he's going to be able to, I think in the pocket, he's just faster. He's more dangerous, and he's getting better. He's evolving. He's 32. Frankie is 38. He's a lot fresher. He had that layoff where since he's came back, he's looked fantastic. And man, I just don't like this spot for Frankie Edgar, man. I like this spot for Chan Sung Jung. I think he's going to get another big win and put his name in the hat as well for that, you know, potential title shot there at 145 against Volkanovski. But, you know, I just don't get it for Frankie Edgar. What if he wins, what is this going to get him? Nothing, really. It's not like he has the motivation to stay at 145 and, you know, win the title. So my pick's going to be Korean Zombie here to get the knockout victory. And for the most confident pick of the week, I'm going to say it's Sungwoo Choi. For the parlay of the week, it's going to be Omar Morales and Kyung Ho Kang. And my underdog of the week is going to be Volkan Ozdemir. And I actually have picked quite a few underdogs on this card. Some big underdogs like Charles Jourdain. Believe he's plus over plus 200. I think that Jung Young Park is an underdog. I believe that Amanda Lemos is a pretty big underdog as well. So I've picked some decent underdogs in this fight. I think Ryan Benoit is either a slight underdog or it's even on the money line. But yeah, so make sure to comment, like, subscribe. Let's try to get over 100 likes again. We got over 200 likes last time, so that was sick, guys. Thanks a lot. And make sure to, share this video on social media to your friends and all that. And thanks for watching, and let's end the year good and have fun watching these fights.